Would you pass the gravy, please?
Ron Van Dam is an experienced talk show host. Do not attempt to try this at home.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Hello? Hello?
Whatever.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, oh, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Thank you, Julie. Welcome to the program. How are you today? Respond now. I'm getting all of a sudden all these survey questions by email and also on the telephone, as if companies are actually interested as to what my opinion is of them. I know so well that they don't. My latest run-in was with this company called Comcast Xfinity. Perhaps you've heard of them. Without them, apparently, I have no telephone service. I have no television to watch, and I have no internet service. They pretty much control my life. They can cut me off. I'm like a country where sanctions can be imposed upon me by Comcast. Ron, why don't you go to Verizon? Okay, same difference. Same thing, difference. No difference. They're monopolies. They're partnered monopolies. In the state of Rhode Island, they actually have a cable company called Cox Cable. I'm not even going to go there. I'm not. Apparently, they have a survey. They call up and they say, this is Cox Cable. Would you recommend Cox to your neighbors? And I just don't even know how to answer that. I just don't. Sure, maybe my mind might go to the dirty side of life, but I still can't answer that question. I can't. It's like that big wholesale store calling me up and saying, do you like BJ's? I can't answer that. I can't legitimately answer that. My mind just goes to different places, and I can't say that. I can't publicly say that I do. That's embarrassing. If I do, I'm not telling you that I do or I don't. But how dare you ask me if I do? That's very personal. Anyway, I had a run-in with Xfinity Comcast. I don't like them. Here's why I don't like them. Because I've been paying them exorbitant amount of money. It's ransom. It's ransom. If you don't give us the money, we don't give you the TV and the internet and the phone. Oh, God, I got to make ransom payments to them now. Or we'll charge you more money. This is blackmail. This is blackmail. I wasn't getting any television service this morning when I woke up. And I like to watch a little television when I wake up. And I pay for it, so I should be able to get it. So I called Comcast, 1-800-COMCAST. How'd they get that number? When you're a monopoly, you can get any phone number you want. And I spoke to a lady, and I'm sorry, I'm not being racist. I'm really not. She had an Indian accent, and my immediate response was, I'm speaking to somebody in Nepal. I'm speaking to one of those telemarketers in India. You know, they have gigantic telemarketing conglomerates in India. All they do with like huge buildings with thousands of people in them, and they just call all around the world and try to scam you. Or they could be legitimate, but they're all in India. It's true. So when I hear an Indian accent on the phone, my immediate response is, uh-oh, what are you trying to scam me on now? So this Comcast operator happened to be had an Indian accent, and I legitimately could not understand half the stuff she was saying, and I continually said that. That didn't make me happy. In any event, so much for that. In any event, I just don't like Comcast. I have problems with them. And during the phone call, they say, do you mind if we call you back after half an hour? It's a satisfaction survey. Do you mind taking it? And I always say, I don't mind telling you how I feel about you. No. Fine. I mean, I don't call Comcast because I want to say hello and see how they're doing. The only reason I ever call Comcast is if I have a problem. That's it. Why would I call you otherwise? If the TV work is working, the phone is working, the internet is working, why the hell would I just call you up and say, hey, how's it going, man? Just calling up to say hello. You don't do that. You call when you have a problem. But they don't seem to understand that. They think people should be calling up saying, hey, just want to say hello. Love you guys. Bye. So I always take the survey, and it's automated. It's always automated. It's never a person anymore. And that's probably the saddest thing of my professional lifetime. The saddest thing is that people don't call me anymore. I get automated recordings on everything. Everything. It's so rare. When you hear a person's voice on the phone and it's an actual human being, you feel like euphoria, you know, like, oh my God, there's another human being that works somewhere. But still, it's always, this call's being recorded for training purposes. It's not for training purposes. It's so that I can't sue you, or vice versa. So I take the survey and I say, you recently had a conversation with one of our agents. They call them agents over there, secret agents. Recently had a conversation with one of our agents. Rate them zero being poor to 10 being fantastic. Well, of course, I put zero. I mean, it's because I just don't like them. I will always refuse to say that they do anything well. What's the point of the survey? And that's what I'm talking about right now. What is the point of the survey? I really feel, and I could be wrong, I'm telling you my feelings. Tell me if you agree with me. Whenever you take a survey, when it's finished, do you say to yourself, they're not going to use this. They're not going to read this. They're just doing the survey thing to make me think that my opinion matters. This stuff goes in the garbage as soon as I hang up. And surveys that you fill out and you mail them, they don't give a crap about how you feel. They throw them out. They keep the ones that are good, and they throw out the ones that are bad. Wrong. These are independent surveys. Most of them are independently hired surveys by the companies. It's their surveys. It's the company's survey, let's face it. And they say it's order to improve themselves. It's not in order to improve themselves. It's in order to make the customer feel like they make a difference, but they don't. You're not tricking me. You're not scamming me, companies. This has just turned my entire world into distrust. And I think it's done the same to you. With all the robocalls and the scams and the internet scams and the people on Facebook that want to be your friends and yet they live in Turkestan and their common friend is nobody. These are just, everything has to be questioned now. Everything. Were we too naive as a society before? Perhaps. But we didn't have to worry about things because people weren't scam. Oh, there were scammers. But nothing like, now it's rampant. and the internet is to blame. Every day, that little balance scale, like, is the internet all the wonderful things are on one side of the scale, and all the horrible breaches and scams and internet piracy and hackers, they're on the other side. That scale is tipping toward the bad part. We are spending zillions of billions of fillions of trillions, words that can't express the amount of money that is spent by companies, individuals, and human beings alike in order to protect ourselves from something that we created, the internet. It does wonderful things. It's incredible. Here are some of the wonderful things that the internet has done. It has ruined the economy of the United States. What, Ron? Yes. Way back in the 70s, there were issued reports that someday in the next century, which is where we are, that robots will take over our jobs. Automation will take jobs away from us and unemploy most of this country. And everybody said, machines can never, never take over the ability and the performance of an actual human being, because we're a thinking thing and robots can't think and they can't do the things that people can do. How wrong you were. They can do everything that people can do and then some. There are no more telephone operators. There are no customer service agents that pick up the phone and say, hello, Dextrose Company, how may I direct your call? They're all unemployed. They're fired. Now it's recordings. Welcome to the Dextrose Company. To speak to customer service, press 1. To speak to... They all got fired and replaced by robots. All the factory workers who used to make our cars, who used to screw the doors onto the bodies of the cars, they're fired, they're gone. Robots do that now. All the people that used to add and subtract and divide and figure things out, they're fired, they're all gone. Machines do that now. All the filing that used to be done in offices, they're all fired. They're gone. Machines do that now. Librarians. You name the industry. Computers have killed it. The publishing industry, the printing industry, the film industry. Gone, fired, done, cooked, gone. Zillions of people losing their jobs. Maybe not zillions, maybe just trillions. Where'd the jobs go? Did they go to Mexico? Did they go to China? Did they go to India? Not as much as we killed our own jobs because of automation and computers and the internet. I had a small business for a long time. Took out an ad in the phone book. Remember phone books? That industry is gone as well. There's a long list of industries that are just gone and not replaced. Used to put an ad in the Yellow Pages. It cost me about 20, 30 bucks a month for a headline ad. Bold print, 10 bucks a month. It was a staple of doing business. Yeah, not a big deal. Now, it's more than 10 bucks. Now you have to market yourself on the internet in various, many, multiple ways. And you've got to pour zillions of dollars into it. Not zillions, trillions, maybe thousands. I don't know. I'm into zillions today for some reason. Everything's zillions. I have zillions of sperm. Well, maybe not zillions. And then you have to pay for internet security so people don't hack your system and steal your identity. And you know, there are ransom hackers now. And we're going to interview one next week. They actually take companies for ransom. We've hacked into your system. We have all your customers' data. If we release this, it will ruin your company. You'll spend zillions of dollars to recover. We're asking that you pay us $72 million by Wednesday night at midnight. Otherwise, your entire system will be shut down and hacked. Your business will be dead.
Yeah, that happens.
It's new, but it's happening. So that little balance scale of good and bad is starting really to tilt the bad part pretty heavily. And that's all I'm saying. I don't want to preach too much because I'm supposed to be funny and I'm supposed to be humorous. And I don't think you like me preaching for the whole show, do you? You don't like it, do you? I don't blame you. I know.
Ron Van Dam likes to treat every listener as someone with whom he is having an intimate, personal relationship. Although no money changes hands, there are fewer sticky bodily fluids, about half as many apologies, and he probably won't have to get rid of your body in the long run. Other than that, it's a pretty standard relationship for Ron. You're listening to The Ron Van Dam Show.
It was unbelievably painful.
I know. It hurt me too. Let's talk politics. How are you? You saw this coming, didn't you?
A sign, everywhere a sign. Blocking out the sea and re-breaking my mind. Do this, don't do that. Can't you read the sign?
I warned you. Here's something that people don't understand that I think I do, and maybe I can help you understand something. Donald Trump, I don't forget who he is and what he does, but Donald Trump said in one of his midnight tweets, actually not even midnight, like 3 o'clock in the morning kind of tweets, this man needs some sleep. He's having a nervous breakdown. He's having a nervous breakdown, and it's about time because he's given us one. All the people living in this country are having nervous breakdowns, except for 30%, which still support him, but otherwise we're all having nervous breakdowns. It's about time he had one. Take a Somanex. Get some sleep, man. You POTUS, you. Anyway, Trump, here's what he doesn't understand. This is not a business. This country is not a business. It seems like it is to me, but it's not run like a business. We had founding fathers, and that sounds like no one knows who the actual father is. But I don't mean that. We had people, when they organized the rules and regulations of this country in order to make a democracy long-lasting, as long as possible, they came up with this form of government to stop the tyranny that was taking place from England itself. They wanted to make sure that the United States and democracy would never have a king, would never have a tyrant or a king or one person in charge of everything, and everybody must do as the king says. That's called dictatorship. Donald Trump actually stated that he admires certain dictators. He continues to say that or intimate it. And the reason he does it is because they are extremely efficient governments. They're efficient because they're not governments. They're one person leading the thing and doing whatever they want to do without opposition. That would not work in this country. People would uprise and lay their bodies down in order to preserve democracy. Donald Trump doesn't understand this. When you run a company, you hire people around you. You are the king. You are the decision maker in the company. It is your company. You are the leader, the president, the founder, the CEO, you make the decisions. And if it fails, you're out of business and we're done. Donald Trump thought he could run the country like he runs his business. He told us so. Were you listening? We thought, oh, what a successful businessman. If he could only run the country the way he runs a business, we would be in good shape. Do you know what you were actually saying when you thought that? I wish we had a dictatorship. I wish we just had a king that made all the decisions for us, and we had nothing to do with it. That's what you were saying, because that's the way businesses are run. Businesses are not democracies where they ask all the workers, well, what do you think? We'll do what the majority of you think in this business. Businesses don't work like that. They are run by dictators, by kings and queens. You don't understand that, do you? You didn't think about that part. So Trump becomes this quote-unquote president, and he thinks that he can just walk in and make all the decisions and correct everything. He forgot about one thing. This is a democracy. Here's what the founding fathers did. They made sure we never had a king or a tyrant ruler ever again or at all. In other words, they wanted to stop people like Donald Trump who would think that that's the way to run a country. That is the birth, continuation of democracy, or it is its death. That's why Donald Trump doesn't work. That's why his presidency doesn't work. Because this is not a business, it's a democracy of people. The workers decide, not the CEO. And that doesn't make a company. That's not the way companies are structured. Our founding fathers wanted to make sure that that was never the case. Because here's the decision. We all say government is inefficient. Government is inefficient. It's inefficient. It's purposely inefficient. It's inefficient so that one person cannot effectively do whatever they want, whenever they want, immediately. The Senate, the House of Representatives, slow things down so nothing gets out of hand. It forces you to rethink. It forces the people to be involved without a tyrant standing in the White House making all the decisions for us, signing all the bills, and thinking for us and doing for us. That is king. That's what we didn't want. We wanted to slow down those decisions. We wanted to make sure that those decisions were reviewed by the people and the representatives of the people without having a tyrant king dictator. That's what this is all about. So by definition, we cannot be efficient. Government is not supposed to be efficient. Government is supposed to represent us. Its purpose is not to be efficient and quick. That's the opposite of what the founding fathers wanted. Donald Trump, over the weekend, tweeted and said in interviews that Senate and Congress has to be reformulated because it just throws up roadblocks to what should be done by him, the king. He didn't say by him, the king. That's what I added on. He thinks Congress should be reevaluated, restructured so that things can go through quickly, efficiently, and immediately by the king. Donald, you never went to history class. You never understood what democracy is supposed to be. Democracy is supposed to be, hey, wait a minute, let's think this through first and check with the people. That's what democracy is supposed to be. And that means you're not supposed to be efficient. You're supposed to be inefficient. The choice was be inefficient and have a democracy or be efficient and have a king. Because when you're a king or a dictator, stuff happens immediately the way you want it immediately right now. And the people have no say. And that's not what we wanted. But that's what Trump wants. And that's what makes him wrong. Because he doesn't have an understanding of democracy. At all. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. Sorry. I'm sorry. Did you not expect this today from me? We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we have a guest that I think you are going to just love. You're going to love this man. Show's going to go a little bit long today, I have a feeling. This man, his dog wrote a book. Ron, dogs can't write books. Well, they can. And this is a fascinating backstory. And we'll talk to this fascinating man and his dog right after these words.
Wildlife poaching doesn't just happen in faraway places. It's a crime committed against countless wild animals all around you. Poachers don't care about hunting seasons, endangered species, or even the safety of other humans. The Humane Society Wildlife Land Trust, which protects wild animals through habitat preservation and by confronting cruelty, needs your help. Learn your state's wildlife laws, so when you witness a crime against a wild animal, you can report it immediately. Help protect wildlife at wildlifelandtrust.org.
Smart lights, smart locks, smart thermostats. You love your new connected technology. And the Consumer Technology Association wants to help you protect the security of your devices. First, don't use default or easy-to-guess passwords. Create unique ones and keep them safe. Next, look for and install security updates from device manufacturers. Also, have an active firewall for your home router. And consider using a professional installer to set up your new devices. Easy tips from the Consumer Technology Association to help keep your devices secure.
Wally Bregman joins us now. He's an author. And there's a book out called Lessons from Shadow, My Life Lessons for Boys and Girls. How you doing, Wally?
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Great, thank you. Pleasure to have you here today. Always interested in talking to an author. I find them fascinating because their minds are a little twisted. And I mean that as a compliment, by the way. Okay. This is...
Well, I'm not... I have to clarify it. I am not really the author. It was written by Shadow. I translated it for her.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay, fine.
I consider myself a translator.
But you're still twisted, I think. Yes? No.
Yes, a little.
Okay, fine. All right. Tell me about the book. First of all, what ages is this geared for?
6 to 10, basically. Okay. The book is intended as either a read to the child at bedtime or go through the book with the child who's not reading,
right,
or to read with the child who is already at a reading level 8 or 9 or 10.
Okay.
And what the book is a series of lessons as spoken through Shadow's mouth that both Shadow and the children experience. For example, being lonely.
Yes.
Wanting to run away. Not wanting to eat what's good for them. Moving. Uh-huh. Being sad. All these experiences. What I did is I anthropomorphized Shadow so that she would say, I know what it's like running away, and uh-huh, I got mad at my mommy, and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And then in each chapter, at the end of the chapter, Shadow tells her story. There is a page, and it says, what is Shadow's lesson? Now, if you're reading it with the child, you say, okay, little Rollo, what do you think Shadow meant by what happened to her and her experience, and how would you feel about that? And then you turn the page, and there's the answer, what Shadow's lesson is. The point is that these little subjects of being lonely, for example, or not wanting to move, these are all things that little kids experience, but so do dogs.
Yeah.
And the way the solution is put to them in this book is non-confrontational. It's non-argumentative. In other words, the mother or father that's reading the book is not saying this. Shadow is saying this. Aye. It's a nice, sweet doggy that's telling you why you shouldn't run away, or why you shouldn't be angry at people, or that's the overall gestalt of the book.
Interesting, interesting. Now, Shadow is a black lab, I understand.
She is that, and she's about 20 feet from me right now.
Okay,
yes. And she 12-year-old rescue dog.
Right, and she wrote the book.
Absolutely.
Okay. You interpreted it. Was it Shadow's own thoughts, or did you compound them as Shadow?
Well, I talked to him as Shadow.
Okay, fine. All right.
But it's interesting because the feedback I've received from people who know her and don't.
Right.
All love her and say, I'm sorry about that. All love her and say, well, Shadow told me that I shouldn't do this or shouldn't do that. And it's just sort of a Santa Claus-y kind of thing.
Yeah, it is a Santa Claus-y kind of thing.
It is.
It is interesting. We all have that connection with our pets, usually a dog, where we think we know what the dog is thinking, and wouldn't it be incredible if we could actually communicate on that level? So it's also kind of appeasing a dream that we all have in common.
Well, it is, and I'll tell you, from a very personal standpoint, what happened was my wife passed away after 59 years last August, two August ago.
I'm very sorry.
And at the same time, or not the same time, but 2 or 3 months later, the dog that Shadow had been living with, Betsy, also passed away.
Oh.
So here we are, going from a family of four to a family of two in 3 months.
Wow. That's a
and
lot.
So
that's a lot.
I freely admit that it was sort of just the two of us kind of thing, and I would talk to her.
Sure.
Because she was the only one left to talk to.
Sure. Wow.
And I think that in a funny way, I mean, I'm 83 years old. I haven't had any little children around for a very, very long time.
Right.
But, and I've written 3 or 4 other books. That's different. But in being alone with her and talking to her, you almost get the feeling that I was able to anthropomorphize, you know, with her. And the first, the book sort of wrote itself backwards, because the first thing we talked about was being alone.
Uh-huh.
And that chapter, which is in the book, it's called Being Sad, is one of the most important chapters, and in some cases controversial with some people, although everybody who finally read it said they thought that it was handled so delicately and so beautifully that it was important for young kids to know, as Shadow says, that bad things happen to nice people.
Yeah. Also that bad things happen in one's life, and that speed bumps do exist. Yeah.
Exactly, and that, you know, life goes on.
Yes.
So that really, as I think back, was probably the genesis
of course.
The book, and then it sort of developed itself into what it is. And I wish I knew. I wish I could say that I had this grand plan from the beginning, and this is the way it was going to come out.
Yeah.
But everything just worked. For example, a kid's book has to be illustrated, and it has to be relatively short, and so on. So I went to a group that I'd used for some other books called Upworks, and I got a freelance lady. I looked at her works, and the illustrations she did are absolutely sensational.
Mm-hmm.
And I sent her pictures of Shadow, and then she did the treatments of each of the things, when she was lonely, when she was sleeping, and so on. And she's in Chile. I've never talked to her. I've never met her. I don't know what she looks like.
Uh-huh.
We did the whole thing on the internet.
Wow.
But it's importantly a part of the book. I mean, I think without her pictures, the book would not be close to as successful as it is.
Do the readers who have engaged in the book so far, do they have this need and want to meet Shadow?
Yes. As a matter of fact, at the end of the book, it says, if you would like to write Shadow, you send her a letter, send her an email, and then it says, write Shadow at AOL.com.
Mm-hmm.
And I've received several letters. One of them says, from a little kid, that I would like you to come and be my sister, and I would like to be with you and meet you, and you sound like a wonderful person, dog to be with, and so on. So the kids, again, I don't know whether it's writing to Santa Claus or whether it's somewhere in between, but there's definitely a connection, and if we do any TV shows or things like that, of course they can see her.
Of course. It goes beyond Santa Claus, because there is a relationship that children, and then they grow up and they become adults, that they do have with their dog. So it kind of goes beyond that. And I guess you experienced that in a spiritual way. I would guess we call it spiritual in your situation. And
yes, I think you're right.
Yeah. And I think that that actually does exist. So it's very interesting the way that you've done this and the way that you've approached this, in the sense that it's not fable, really. It's whatever you feel is good and can sustain. It's not a fable necessarily. So that's pretty cool. And it also gives a child that connection to his or her animal, which I personally think is so important in one's life, to have an animal companion and to set up that kind of relationship. I think it says a lot about the person when they do have a relationship.
You're absolutely right. In fact, letter I got, or review I got, was a terrific review, and the guy said that he'd been reading it to his son, and the son loved it and everything. He said, the only problem is he wants a dog now.
And that's a problem.
As soon as he learned he wants a shadow, I want to buy a shadow.
Yeah. I wonder how many adults read the book to their children, and it's like it gets more to the adult's head than it does the child, maybe, interestingly enough.
Well, I've had some people who did not have children but had older children and bought it for them to read, which is sort of interesting.
Yeah, I think it kind of transcends. I mean, I get the idea.
The lessons are universal, and they're just sort of, some are fun and some are not. But, I mean, the fun one, for example, when she kept running away, and we tried the electric fence, and she hated that, and she wouldn't go outside, so we kept doing. Finally, one day, my handyman came by, and I said, Clark, I don't know what to do. She runs away. He said, well, where does she run? I said, I don't know. He said, so he walks the perimeter of the fence, and he stops. Yeah. He says, right there, that's where she's getting out.
Uh-huh.
I said, well, he said, don't you see the bent grass and this and this and this? And I said, no.
Uh-huh.
And he said, well, in a land far away when I was a young man, I was doing this to try and find the Viet Cong, and I can do it. And I did it. And he went down there, put in 4 feet of fence, and the dog never ran away again.
Wow.
This guy had been a tunnel rat or something like that.
Yeah. That's weird.
But these are kind of interesting little sidebars that I'm able to put in there because they're true. I couldn't make them up because I'm not a fiction writer, but everything that's in there and all the little funny incidences, here she is. Hello, Shadow. Say something.
Hey, Shadow.
There's someone talking to you from Boston.
Hi, Shadow. Well, I have no Boston accent, so Shadow doesn't know where I'm from.
but that's the point is that's the way. There she is. What are you saying? Come here, Shadow.
Shadow. Hey, Shadow. Shadow.
She wants to go for a walk. Anyway, people can get this book at, of course, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, but she has a really nice website.
Uh-huh. Well, there she is, yeah.
She has a really nice website called lessonsfromshadow.com.
Great.
www.lessonsfromshadow.com, and you can
she wants to go for a walk.
I mean, people think it's a put up job and this is a recorded message, but it's not.
No, it's
anyway,
not. Can tell.
www.lessonsfromshadow.com, and you can, there's a sample chapter there, there's some reviews there, you can order a copy there. It comes in a hardback, a softback, and Kindle. And so, you know,
beautiful.
And I think people will really connect with it. It's one of those things. It's only been out for a month or so, but I'm getting that feeling that the feedback from people that it's not only a fun book, but it's important for them in their interaction with their children.
Well, it's special and it's different, and that's what makes it work. I think it's like nothing else. And it's pretty cool, literally and literally. That makes no
sense. Yeah, very good.
I couldn't even get it out. Hey, Walter, thank you so much for your time. It's fascinating, and hopefully we'll hook up again if you do another book.
Oh, very good, Ron. Good luck to you, and how are things in Boston?
They're fine. Everybody says hello to you. And everything,
yes, well.
Everything's good. And Shadow, have a nice walk.
Say goodbye, Shadow. Nope.
Okay.
He just wants to walk. Okay, Ron.
Cool, thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, that'll do it for me today. Have a wonderful day. Be back again with you tomorrow, if you will so engrace me. Until then, I wish you peace.